Hey, DC, did you know that it's Arbor Week? And that means it's the perfect time to learn about and protect our trees. Local nonprofit Casey Trees is helping to protect our tree canopy by teaching kids the value of trees and working with them to plant new ones. The trees they're planting now ensure that future Washingtonians have a beautiful and healthy city. So support Casey Trees today by giving online at caseytrees.org/give. Your tax-deductible donation will go directly toward tree planting efforts in historically underserved communities, including schools in Wards 5, 7, and 8. Once again, that's caseytrees.org/give. Let's plant some trees, y'all! Today on CityCast DC, DC Council is closer than ever to decriminalizing unlicensed street vending. But as the year-end nears, sellers pushing for the change may be running out of time. DCist's Hector Arzate has been talking to vendors all about why these changes matter and how they would affect street vendor corridors like the one in Columbia Heights, where I live. It's Wednesday, December 7th, 2022. I'm Bridget Todd, and this is CityCast DC. I'm here with Hector Arzate, DCist's immigrant communities reporter. Hector, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
A change to DC's criminal code will decriminalize street vending without a license in 2025, but it is currently still a criminal offense that can get street vendors subject to fines or arrests. And vendors want DC Council to pass two bills as emergency legislation that they say would help them right now. What exactly would these bills change for street vendors in DC?
So there's two bills, bills 2449 and 2450. And so the first one is the Street Vending Decriminalization Amendment Act of 2021. And the second one is the Sidewalk Vending Zones Amendment Act of 2021. And these were actually introduced by Ward 1 Councilmember Brianne Naidoo last year. The first bill would decriminalize street vending without a license and make it so that vendors aren't subjected to arrest or any criminal fines that come with that. The second bill actually would sort of change the way that sidewalk vending zones are organized in a way that street vending advocates think would reform the process. In previous years, they've described a lot of challenges when it comes to establishing their own kiosks and posts on the sidewalk. So this would make it more equitable in their mindset to sell on the sidewalks.
What kind of challenges are street vendors facing right now with the laws as they stand?
Well, currently under DC law, vendors can be subjected to fines and even arrest. On the one hand, some council members have come out and said, well, we're not currently asking law enforcement to even enforce this, right? On the other hand, you do still have some street vendors, especially within the advocacy groups, who are saying that people are still getting arrested.
What would the consequences look like for someone who is arrested? And what kind of fines are they paying?
What I've been told in previous instances is people are getting fines anywhere between $200, $300. But I have heard that the fines can actually increase significantly if it's not your first time. And so I have heard people getting fines of upwards of $1,000.
Wow. How are street vendors feeling at the moment?
Well, I think with the recent turn of how this legislation is going for the end of the year, they're feeling pretty upset. I've heard people say that they're feeling very sad and angry. They actually put out a release statement on Friday, I think it was, urging DC Council to really move to do something, anything for these two bills. So what I've heard from them is that they're feeling pretty upset that these bills aren't going to probably make it through the year. But on a daily basis, I'm hearing people are scared. They're frustrated. I actually interviewed a street vendor named Reina, and she told me actually that she's afraid, you know. She's just trying to make a living. She's just trying to support her children. And I think the slogan that the vendors have come up with for these bills is Ni un año más, which means, you know, not another year, because they don't want to wait until 2025 to have this decriminalized.
And just to quickly back up for a second, why are there so many vendors without licenses in the first place, to the extent that they would want unlicensed vending to actually be decriminalized?
Well, as I mentioned, I spoke to a vendor named Reina who works, over on 14th and Irving Street. And, you know, she actually told me, she described to me a process of what it's like to apply for a street vending license. And, you know, she told me straight up that it can be difficult and confusing. She went back and forth with a DC agency to provide the proper documents.
She also says it's pretty expensive for people who are just trying to start up their business. You know, she just says it's not as easy. It's easier said than done, is what she told me.
So set the scene for me. I can imagine that it's a lot of the vendors who are for decriminalizing street vending, but who wants to keep it illegal and why?
A lot of people who are opposed to these two bills as they are do want street vendors to be able to make a living and support themselves and share their culture with DC. That being said, what I've heard them argue is that the bills as they are need a lot of changes, is what they've essentially said. What I've heard people say is, well, how are they going to enforce food safety handling? Say that a vendor has some sort of cooking ware, something with fire or heat. How are you going to enforce it when it's a fire hazard for the public safety? Things to that effect is what most people have said.
Do you have any sense of how things like food safety and health safety would be insured with this regulation?
From what I have heard, a lot of it would come down to being very similar to the way that a farmer's market operates, where there are very clear regulations for how to sell not just food, but also crafts and more artisanal items. And so that's the most that I've been hearing, is that's what it would be most akin to. There would still be very clear regulations, very obvious rules for how to do that. One thing that people sort of oppose to this issue have brought up is the potential for people not living in DC to come to DC and become street vendors. So I've gotten comments, notes from people saying like, oh, well, how do we know that these folks, if we just get rid of unlicensed street vending, who's to say that they're not just coming from Maryland? How does that work with all that kind of tax purposes and things like that? And I just, as a reporter, most of the people I've spoken to have lived in DC for years, if not decades.
Yeah, that's an important note to include, that like, we're talking about a DC issue and most of the major players involved are longtime DC residents.
Yeah, yeah. It's just people saying like they don't know where they're coming from, but I think it's pretty clear.
So a report from the nonprofit Beloved Community Incubator looked at the data around who is actually being arrested for this, and they found that more than 95% of the vendors arrested between January 1st, 2018 and September 30th of 2022 were Black, Indigenous, and people of color. What does that say about like the communities that are really being directly impacted? Like, who is being impacted in DC around this issue?
Yeah, well, in my reporting, almost everybody that I've spoken to belongs to those groups. And as an immigrant communities reporter, I would also say that immigrants make up a big majority of these street vendors. And I just want to say that in my reporting, a lot of the folks who I've interviewed have been families. A lot of the folks in the community who are street vendors are the sole provider of their families. It's not uncommon sometimes to see parents street vending with their child after school assisting them. What I've heard from street vendors directly is that might seem strange in the United States, but that's actually very typical in some cultures, especially some cultures from Latin America, countries in Central America. The family is involved in these sort of things. I've heard time and time and again street vendors telling me, like, this is what I knew how to do when I came to this country, or when I was growing up in DC, in the area. This is something I knew how to do. I knew how to make these things. I knew how to cook this food that's so near and dear to their culture. Especially in DC, we have, I mean, if you're listening to this and you're like, well, what kind of food is he talking about? We're talking about like atole, you know, pupusas, tamales, you know, all kinds of stuff like that, fresh cut fruit. And these are things that vendors are telling me, like, I grew up making this. My mother taught me how to do this. This is a recipe that I've known my whole life. And so when I needed a job, when I needed to make money, this is what I did. It's sort of a staple now in DC. I think you could ask a lot of people and they'd tell you, oh yeah, Columbia Heights, 14th and Irving, that's where a lot of the vendors are. But of course, they're not just in Columbia Heights, they're all throughout DC. They're in many different wards.
Yeah, I live in Columbia Heights, and the woman who sells mangoes on 14th Street where I live is a community staple. She once let me buy a mango on credit, so that was very nice of her.
Yeah, that's not unheard of.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that I love about the community because it makes me feel like I am in a city. It's like one of the reasons I love living in a city is like all the different cultures that I get to encounter just every day. And it's like it's something that is a reminder of like I am in a city with, you know, a rich tapestry of cultures. And for me personally, it's been a nice way to engage with that.
Hey, DC art lovers, award-winning actress and playwright Anna Deavere Smith is giving a four-part lecture series at the National Gallery of Art. It is called Chasing That Which Is Not Me / Chasing That Which Is Me. Smith is known for her roles in The West Wing, Inventing Anna, and Nurse Jackie, so you definitely want to come take a listen. They'll be every Sunday from April 28th to May 19th at 2 p.m. And the best part is they are totally free! Register to secure your spot at nga.gov/melon24.
Hey, DC. One of the reasons hosting this show is so important to me is this statistic from the U.S. Surgeon General. Ready for it? The percentage of Americans who report feeling very attached to their community is only 16%. Now, there's a lot of ways to look at that number, which, by the way, is pre-pandemic data, but here's how I'm thinking about it. CityCast DC is something that we're building to make it easier for you to feel attached to this community. I don't want anyone to feel lonely or bored here in DC. I want you to know how you can help make this city more fun and more livable, and where all the good local stuff is at. And if you think we're doing a good job, I'm asking if you'll become a member of CityCast DC today at membership.citycast.fm. You'll get exclusive perks like ad-free listening, event invites, and members-only guides. But most of all, you'll be part of a project dedicated to making the number of DC residents who feel attached to this community a heck of a lot higher than 16%. See you over at membership.citycast.fm, and thank you. I know one concern, particularly on 14th and Columbia Heights, is street vendors and how they impact things like sidewalk accessibility. Is this something that you've heard people express?
Yeah, definitely. It is a shared space, right? And that's something that I've heard in my reporting. Some people say, well, we need to ensure that people with walkers or wheelchairs can get through the sidewalk safely and conveniently. And then on the other side, the street vendors themselves, they are trying to address that directly. And so actually last week at the street vending pop-up at the Wilson building, they actually had, the street vendors had displayed these tents and they actually had a signage that said, this is what the street vending zones could look like in the future. And so there was a lot of room for people to navigate. Now, granted, that part of DC, the sidewalk is pretty big. It's right on Pennsylvania Avenue, but you know, it's just one example that they were trying to say, a model that they would like to see in the future.
I'd love to know more about that pop-up protest. I know it was outside of Phil Mendelson's office, which is in the Wilson building. What was the vibe like?
Well, you know, when I showed up with my pen and paper, everybody was sort of just hanging out, singing, buying food. There was all kinds of stuff being sold. I mean, there was Guatemalan textile. There was even, I think, someone got like Cajun pasta. You know, because it's the food that's sold by street vendors, it's not just food from Latin America. You know, it's also, there's a street vendor who a lot of people know. Her name is Artemis, and she's actually from Trinidad and Tobago. There's also, there's just a good variety. And so at the pop-up, there was people selling lychee, mangoes, pasta, tamales. And there was even a musician there from a group called Son La Lucha. He actually wrote and performed a song that was dedicated to Phil Mendelson. And so they actually eventually made their way into the Wilson building to try to go to Mendelson's offices to perform the song for him. I think they even brought a plate of food for him.
Were they able to get up with him?
I don't think he was in his offices that day, is what I heard.
They left the food. So I know this is kind of an evolving story. Do you have any thoughts on how we might see this playing out this week? I know that council is kind of running out of time to deal with it this session, right?
Chairman Mendelson held a press conference earlier this week on Monday and spoke pretty plainly about the future of the vending bills. He said that council will be taking a look at the bills early next year. And when he was asked whether the recent protests and pop-ups and testimony had swayed him in either direction, he actually said that the pop-up and the protests didn't really sway him very much, but that the 50 or so vendors who testified earlier in November did. He also argued, you know, like other opponents of these two bills, that currently the bills don't address the government's need to ensure order for public space, consumer protection, and public health, which is something that a lot of opponents have been, you know, taking to issue with regards to these two bills. So with that in mind, advocates and vendors have told me that they've been trying to schedule a meeting with Councilmember Nadeau to sort of ask that she introduce the bills as emergency legislation, which would last about 90 days if it went through.
Hector, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Bridget.
And before you go, some quick news. Mayor Bowser has withdrawn her nominee for the new head of D.C.'s 911 call center after previously defending the controversial choice. Council members had been very vocal about the fact that they would not confirm Karima Holmes, citing the fact that she resigned after a 2020 audit that pointed out several deadly mistakes at the call center. The embattled dispatch center has been heavily criticized this year, and new leadership will aim to fix that. Meanwhile, the Metro unveiled its draft budget proposal for next fiscal year. It includes 3-minute train waits in popular areas, discounts for low-income riders, and a fare hike of 5%. Separately, in a safety update meeting, WMATA officials said that they're aiming to return the lines to automatic train operation, which is technically smoother and safer than human-operated. But the system had been shut down after a 2009 crash that killed 9 people. WMATA says that any faulty tracks have been replaced. And lastly, remember that small plane that crashed into a Montgomery County power line last week? Well, now we know what happened. A new report from the National Transportation Safety Board found the pilot was having trouble navigating in the dark, cloudy conditions and failed to follow guidance from air traffic control. The crash left tens of thousands of buildings without power for several hours. That's all for today here on CityCast DC. If you enjoyed the show, why not tell a friend who lives nearby or can't get enough of buying pupusas from street vendors? I'll be back tomorrow morning with even more news from around the city. Talk to you then.
You can read DCist.com. We have daily reporting from me and all of my wonderful colleagues who are on the beat.